This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanasin with Lin Mark and Xiaoning here in the studio this morning. Actually, Xiaoning is beaming in through the wonders of the internet. In about half an hour, we're going to be taking a look at the cost to the economy if the CMCO is extended. And to help us with this discussion will be Lawrence Todd of the think tank Ideas. But in the meantime, let's take a look at the Malaysian automotive sector. Proton officially releases its much-awaited X50 SUV model next Tuesday, and it's been reportedly gotten quite a bit of traction already, having received over 20,000 bookings in just 2 weeks. In comparison, the X70 got over about 10,000 bookings in over a month when it was launched 2 years ago.
So does this mean that Malaysians are buying cars again? Because during the height of the movement control order, sales came to an almost complete halt. Data from the Malaysian Automotive Association showed that back in April, only 141 vehicles were sold, compared with nearly 50,000 units a year before that.
Yeah, so for a view on the sector, we're speaking with Vivek Vaidya, Associate Partner at Frost & Sullivan. Vivek, thank you for joining us this morning. We last spoke to you in January when Frost & Sullivan projected vehicle sales of about 608,000 units for 2020. What's your current assessment of the Malaysian market since COVID-19? How much was it impacted and how well has it recovered?
For Malaysia, I would say the recovery has been, or rather the response from the government has been impeccable. So what has happened is, of course, there was movement control order and it saw a huge drop in GDP. But Malaysian government responded quickly. First and foremost, they offered 6 months moratorium on higher purchase loans, which essentially helped the households to cope up with the decreasing income and increased expenditure. So they could basically sustain themselves for about 6 months. And once that opened up, government actually offered the sales tax, which is GST, was reduced to 0%. So this essentially helped the car prices to be under control. It helped the consumers to cope up with the decreased earnings and increased expenditures. And because of this, we would say that the decline is not as severe as one would have expected. So due to all of this, we are expecting that our initial projection of about 608,000 will come down, but not so significantly. So right now we are projecting about 515,000 units of TIV in Malaysia by end of December.
Now, the unprecedented events of 2020 have forced customers to change their behaviours. So what are some of the consumer trends that you expect to see in the auto sector post-COVID in Malaysia as well as regionally?
Yeah, so definitely. I think there is a big change in the way consumers as well as the auto sectors have responded, or they need to change. And some change has already started happening and some changes is yet to be seen. So first and foremost, the auto companies now need to learn how to sell the car without the customer visiting your showroom. I think that is going to be the biggest learning, because now there are movement control orders. You know, they are most likely to not visit the showroom as often as they would in pre-COVID era. So most of the OEMs now need to go into the digital retailing, which means you need to generate the inquiries online, to provide most of the information, like financial information, it would be valuation of used car, and all the important steps that are taken while purchasing a car need to be done online. So the auto industry needs to learn how to do that. Customers also need to learn how to buy vehicles online. The second most important trend is we would see a big surge in second-hand vehicle sales and second-hand vehicle purchase. Because customers, because of their falling income, some customers losing their jobs, are most likely to downgrade their vehicles. And they would most probably switch to second-hand cars. And we have already seen this happening. Puspacom, the vehicle inspection agency, has received many requests for vehicle transfer. And their turnaround time has already gone up from 1 day to 7 days. The corollary to that is how the component and part sale is likely to go up, because now the cars would be maintained and retained by the customer for a longer period of time. Therefore, the aftermarket, the sale of parts, sale of consumables, tires, lubricants, as well as services will actually go up. So these are all the changes, you know, top few changes that we would see because of the COVID.
Now, looking at Southeast Asia more broadly, there has been news that Indonesian auto market, for example, has not recovered well. So which markets have been most severely impacted and what are the recovery patterns across the region?
So three countries I'd like to single out where we have seen severe decline. So one, obviously, as you mentioned, is Indonesia. The second is Philippines. And third is Singapore. So Indonesia and Philippines is slightly different story. So Indonesia and Philippines, first of all, the government did not respond pretty quickly. Also, economic recovery is not very strong. And most importantly, in both these countries, the customer base got disturbed because there was a large-scale migration, internal migration from cities to rural areas because of unemployment, because of extended lockdowns. Because these customers move, it's a big disturbance to the entire automotive market. And as a result, Indonesia and Philippines have seen a big decline and slow recovery. Singapore is a slightly different case. Singapore got impacted financially. The GDP declined. And since in Singapore, car is a very discretionary purchase. That basically got postponed because of slower recovery as well as lower GDP and strong availability of alternate modes of transportation. A car is not really a big need. It's a more of a want, and that takes a beating whenever we see any decline in economic activity.
So, Vivek, what policies have you seen from governments that are most supportive of their respective auto sector's growth this year, keeping in mind also that in Malaysia, we're expecting a budget 2021 soon?
Right. So, I think we have to segregate the supportive policies in short-term and long-term. So, in short-term, providing tax breaks like Malaysia has done, they have provided 100% sales tax breaks on CKD of vehicle, 50% on CBU. That is likely to help the customers soften the blow as far as the prices of vehicles are concerned. But this cannot be a long-term strategy. Similarly, Vietnam has also provided 50% lower fees on registrations of locally made vehicle, extending the payment deadlines for excise taxes. So Vietnam has also responded to this current crisis. But these are all short-term measures. In long-term, I think the governments will have to look at how they can strengthen the companies, how they can strengthen the entire auto component base, how they can help them to maintain the manpower, also invest continuously in technology and upgrade themselves. I think those are going to be the long-term measures. But as we see, the governments haven't really fully recovered from the shock of the short term, and they're still focusing on the short term policy making rather than focusing on long term. And we would start seeing that towards the end of this year, that the governments will start announcing long term supportive measures to support auto sector.
All right, speaking of long term, then, how should Malaysia's auto sector remain competitive against regional players like Thailand, for example?
Yeah, I think Malaysia has to build a scale in the automotive segment, which will drive down the cost, which will help them to establish a strong value proposition in the global market. Now, you don't have to, Malaysia doesn't have to do that by competing with mass marketed products, but they have to do that by identifying their own niche, maybe a particular type of vehicle, it may be a particular type of powertrain, it may be a particular type of body, etc. And then build competencies to be strong in that segment and be a global supplier, be a regional supplier in that particular segment. So identify the niche, build competencies, build scale, and offer a strong value proposition would be my recommendation for Malaysian automotive industry.
Vivek, thank you for your time this morning. That was Vivek Vaidya at Frost & Sullivan breaking down the not just the situation in Malaysia, but across the Southeast Asian region for automobiles. Xiaoning, what were some of your key takeaways from that? This is a particularly important sector, especially for Malaysia.
Well, he's actually probably more optimistic than the Malaysian Automobile Association because for 2020, they're still only forecasting total vehicle sales of 470,000 versus the original forecast of 600,000. But my big question is, with the recent imposition of the CMCO and the ending of the loan moratorium, will fourth quarter sales actually come down? So I think industry experts are probably still a bit more optimistic. There might be some pent-up demand, especially because sales tax, the sales tax holiday ends release at the end of the year. But of course, the big question is, come budget 2021, what are they going to announce for the auto sector? Is the sales tax holiday going to be extended till the following year, which is what I think many of the car players want?
Yeah, I was particularly taken aback by their own TIV forecast, right? Because MAA, as you pointed out, Xiaoning, was around 470,000. That's the revised number for their forecast for TIV this year. But we did see a significant pent-up demand over the last, when the MCO, was it the CMCO first kind of opened up. I have friends who work in the sales rooms and they saw people coming in to buy up vehicles. That pent-up demand was such a real thing. Whether the CMCO affects that, that's going to be a big question.
Absolutely. And I was very intrigued by Vivek's points about changing consumer trends. What kind of new things that we may see from the automotive sector as we move forward into this, and I hesitate to say it now because it's such a cliche, this new normal. You know, he pointed out that auto players now had to learn to sell cars without customers visiting their showrooms. And I think we did see some players like Toyota and Nissan already debuting online showrooms even just before the MCO started. And so this is probably going to push more car players into considering this as an option. But in the longer term as well, we've talked about the development of Zoom towns as people no longer need to go in, you know, commute every day to be physically present in their workspace. How is this going to affect the demand for cars? Because it will mean that cars are no longer an absolute necessity when it comes to getting you to work if your workspace is an extra room in your house.
Yeah, I guess that's one big question there. Also, I guess that will be an interesting correlation to see with the speeds of internet and connectivity and maybe even 5G later on. But it also is contingent on public transport, right? So the Singapore point he brought up about how Singapore public transport is a discretionary item in Singapore because they have such a good public transport system. Right now, we're going into a few messages and then the 7:30 a.m. news bulletin. When we come back, we'll be getting into the talking about the world's largest IPO with Brock Silver's longtime China investment executive. That's happening in a bit. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.